This episode is sponsored by Baby Audio, maker of creative instruments and effects plugins. Whether it's retro lo-fi goodness with Super VHS or silky top-end with Smooth Operator, Baby Audio is all about adding flavor to a mix. So head on over to babyaud.io to learn more and take 15% off your order using the code HMD15. I'll leave a link in the description below. This episode is brought to you by Schwab Digital and their plugin Orange Clip. Orange Clip matches the sound of a legendary DAW for modern production. I personally use Orange Clip not only for production, but also in mixing on individual audio tracks or drum buses. Adding harmonic content to the signal through soft clipping or wave shaping, giving me the ability to increase the perceived loudness of a given sound source without sacrificing much headroom. So head on over to schwabdigital.com and check out Orange Clip. I'll leave a link in the description below. Now, on to your episode.
Yo, what's going on, y'all? It's your boy, Devon Terrell. Welcome to the Audio Nerds Podcast. Podcast for audio nerds like yourself. Please make sure you comment, like, and subscribe. Also, remember, one lucky person in the comment section is going to get that VIP Gold Edition Rosetta EQ or compressor. Take your pick. But please, for the love of God, please put your at name on Instagram so we can DM you and get that to you. I'm Devon Terrell. I'm a Pro Tools user. To the left of me,
it's your boy, the Prince of the FL, the Fruity Loop Master. Pause if applicable. LJ.
I like the Prince thing. I'm not gonna lie, that's new for me. I've never heard you
Somebody
say Prince.
Somebody said that to me, and I was like, fuck
"Prince man. FL."
That's pretty
Prince
dope. FL.
That's hard. So you got to put a crown on the apricot. What is it? A persimmon?
Persimmon.
What's your logo?
New chain alert. New chain alert.
That's hard. That's hard. A crown on a persimmon is hard. I'm not gonna hold you.
I won't lie.
I'm excited for. You. I'm very excited for you.
Yeah.
That's good. To the left of me.
Me. Ah, oh, man. Do I even need an introduction at this point? It is the astronaut of Ableton. It's your boy. Courtney Taylor.
You are an astronaut. You keep a headpiece on you.
That's
it's
right.
Always a headpiece on, bro.
You know why it's always a headpiece on in that bonnet? Because he's always in progress. Who told us that and was like, yo, my boy always in progress?
Who said that? Who did say that?
I feel like it was TZ or somebody was like, yo, he always got the bonnet on. It's like your thing.
He's always in progress. I love
Ableton,
that.
It's like how it's a reflection on how Ableton takes so long to load. So it's like maybe.
I thought he was going to say, get back good. To I'm us and I was ready.
That was good.
But he just shot.
Shout out to your Excel spreadsheet of a DAW.
Yeah.
So when you see us here or when you see us out of our normal circumstances as far as places and stuff like that is concerned, we are and we have a special guest. This person, and I want to preface it with this, is probably the first engineer on a level that we respected highly.
Oh, for sure.
That reached out to us and just said, hey, good job. Like that type of thing. And even, you know, later on just saying like, I would love to come on the pod, blew our minds. Like that was very special to us, man. Like seriously, it meant a lot. And it also helped us to, you know, realize and gave us that motivation to genuinely keep this platform going. Mm-hmm. So I have the honor to introduce you to some songs you may have heard from him. It's like Doja Cat Woman. Also, one of my favorite songs, Burner Boys, Last Last. Mm. Ladies and gentlemen, we have Jesse Ray.
Thank you guys for having me, man.
Yeah, of course, man.
I want to put this on wax.
Okay.
The funniest engineer we've had on this couch.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Opinion, I ain't gonna lie.
He reminds me of me.
Yeah.
It's like just taking it to the edge.
Pole. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. When we was walking around Nam and just seeing stuff, like he was making the same jokes that we was making. I was like, yo, facts. I'm not crazy. So Jesse, you know, one thing we always ask everyone at the very start of every podcast is, what was your DAW journey? Like, what was the first DAW you started in and what's the DAW that you are like landed in now today?
Awesome. What if it wasn't a DAW?
That's fine. So you just age yourself. That's fine.
Whoa.
So it's like, even if it's like equipment, you know, consoles, whatever, like what was your like first process to where you got now?
Absolutely, because the background is that my dad was a sound tools user. He had the early Pro Tools.
Right.
But it was way too complex for me to use when I was a little kid.
Yeah.
Lad.
But I had a tape deck that had like the dual cassette, like overdub kind of ability.
Okay. Oh, I remember that. Like it was like two tapes on this side. You could press record. You know what I mean? Yeah.
You would record the content of one along with your microphone or your line input onto the other one. And then vice versa. So you can keep on layering and layering.
Wow.
And the more you layer it, the more it all just got smaller sound and more squished and crappy and distorted.
Right. When you think about tape and stuff like that, especially cassette tapes, like that sound of like trying to layer on it has a specific sound. But yeah, keep telling me like how did it keep growing as far as like what you kept using and stuff? Like what did you get next?
Yeah, right after that, I got a Sony Vaio like computer for Christmas one year.
Classic laptop, by the way.
Yeah, it was incredible. And I had Fruity Loops on there.
Wow.
Wow.
FL again.
Yeah.
That's where he gets the humor from. And, I'm
and it was before the timeline was even integrated into it. So it was just like sequencing, right? You were just like triggering sounds, at least in the version that I had.
Right.
From there, I think a few years later, I got a MacBook and it was like GarageBand. And then into Logic.
Right.
And then I learned Pro Tools. I was like, my dad was like, you're ready to become a man. So it was time.
Love it. So obviously Pro Tools is your DAW of choice and stuff like that.
Yes, now.
Got you. Courtney and I watched your, I believe it's Mix Lab, if I'm not mistaken. What is that series that you had when you did?
Pure Mix.
Pure Mix.
Yeah.
Yes. And I remember the day you dropped it, like I freaked out. And then, I don't know if you, I was probably like the first person that posted it. Like, dog, like he's mixing the whole thing. Like, y'all gotta watch it. And I remember hitting Courtney immediately and we both just watched it and then just like compared notes and stuff like that.
So much game. So much game put out into that video.
One of my favorite like kind of like master classes, if that makes any sense, as far as what I saw on Pure Mix and stuff. One thing that we kind of deemed you on this podcast, and I'm getting right into it because I'm sitting here because I want the information. I don't care. Is we call you the phase god over here. And the reason why we call you the phase god is because you had this really interesting technique, which you did with the vocals, right? Where basically you had all of these auxes that were kind of like parallel sends and stuff like that. And you were using time adjuster. You were using micro shift. You were saturating some of them, and taking those kind of like sounds and blending that in with the original. What I found was you were getting all of this depth, this width, even some of the harshness kind of went away, like just kind of with that technique. What is that technique? How did you come up with it? How are you routing it, by the way, which is very interesting. Like, what is that technique that you use to kind of get that 3D dimensional kind of space out of your vocals and stuff like that?
Yeah, absolutely. So it's essentially just the age old, you know, tried and tested and approved technique of blending in the H3000, which is just this wider delayed kind of chorus-y version of the vocal.
Right.
And essentially, I learned that a lot of the time getting that sparkly, expensive vocal sound wasn't so much, you know, boosting the top end and getting this really bright vocal. Because a lot of the time, it's like a warm vocal in the center.
Yeah.
But you get that effect and all the top from you know, pushing it out wide.
Gotcha.
But then I also couldn't decide, like, what my favorite one was. Like, I love the microshift. I love the time adjuster. Mm-hmm. And I love the HD1000 as well. Right. So I put them all three in the template and realized, well, all of them together kind of do a completely unique new type of thing too.
Right.
And it can really make it sound expensive really quickly.
Heck yeah. Sure. Dude, you would put it on, like, even just like looking at your settings and like when you were throwing each one up, like one was giving me like more of like a front to back dimension. Mm-hmm. Another was giving me like a more of a side dimension. And then another one was just making things feel fuller and richer and stuff like that.
For sure.
And what I found that you did interesting was, you know how we like have our auxins and stuff like that set up? Like, let's say maybe I have like three different reverbs and stuff like that set up. And what I would do classic wise is I would throw up my send as far as what's going to those. And I say, okay, well, this is verb one, verb two send, verb three send. You were doing like, here's my verb kind of like cascade, where you're like one send and this one send is feeding every last one of my reverbs or, you know, whatever your time-based effect is.
I was you've inspired me to like reattack my whole entire like templates between both Pro Tools and Ableton, because I'm just like, oh yeah, why just have one or two reverbs or delays when I could have them all? Just pick and choose which one I want.
And then like blend them. Sick. Like it's even fire. Even that, like, was that something that was taught to you? Or that was that out of like why, like how did you come up with that? Like, I know that might seem like such a minute thing to you, but that's such an unorthodox kind of way to do it for me personally, where it's like you're just like auditioning stuff and just kind of blending reverbs, like even and stuff like that. How did you come up with that?
It's just quick. On one hand, you're limited. You can only do what, 10 sends? You
know? Yeah. And
every template I get, you know, every session I get from different mixers has like quarter, eighth send, reverb, plate, you know, maybe they're all named.
Guilty.
But like, at some point, it's like, I want way more than that. And it actually just came from me, you know, setting up a send and like dialing in a verb and being like, that's okay, let me just duplicate that really quick. Mm-hmm. And then duplicating it and dialing in a different one. It, like, that's how this all came to be.
Gotcha.
And then finally, I was like, well, I'm going to like duplicate it like 25 times.
Right.
And then dial in, you know, bring in, import the session data with the plugins from like the last few several great mixes I loved.
Right. Nice.
And maybe a few settings I've stolen from some engineers that I've worked with that I just really love.
Yeah.
And putting them all together and getting to just draw really quickly. Like, mm-hmm. like getting an inspired sound, being able to throw faders up, throw them down, and just blend in a believable sonic reality of this like ambient space that the vocal is taking place in.
Right. And that's what I noticed.
Just want to let you know, mm-hmm. if you ever need more than 10 cents again, come home, bro.
I would never throw a sin. Hey, man. Yo, I hate throwing sins up and you throw so much.
You could get up to 336, brother.
Sins?
Yeah, man.
Somehow I think it's got to be a lie.
No, yeah, but true. I got to argue, though. Why do you need control over all of those sins? You know, is it like because you want to be able to automate and change the level of how much is going out to each one? Because every sin that I have is just sitting at zero. I don't like having the sins ever change level. Mm-hmm.
Got you.
See, like, and that's, the return is the only thing I'm going to adjust.
That's fun. And that's what I've been like kind of switching my brain for. Like where you're altering the return as opposed to altering the actual sin and stuff like that. Like, but you know what's funny? When I used to work on boards, like as an intern and stuff, we would use the sins. Like, literally, it was a full blast of the signal going to the actual return,
right.
And then we would use the return as the volume of how much I wanted.
Right.
So in my head, I'm not gonna lie, you just hit the light bulb for me. I'm like, oh yeah, that's how we used to do it. Like actually that way and stuff like that. I know. Man, shout out to Zaire. Zaire's gonna figure out how to explain that in a visual for us and stuff and cut that out. But I totally get it.
Shout out to Pro Tools users for always finding an excuse, not a solution.
The fact that they literally took an old school method and made it, and like literally I can do both. That's
if
basically
being
what
honest,
I'm
man. The FL way, the little wires on the bottom.
Nasty.
Is that not reminiscent of?
No,
I never used the board, so I can't tell you. Is that not? Didn't you have to like?
So what I'll say to you
is, I was just thinking about that the other day.
That's disgusting. Disgusting.
Why? If we're being true to the history, brother.
No, it's right. Not true. Because if I'm in FL, when I'm in FL and I said, hey, LJ, can you run a synth from there to there for me? Like sometimes he'll ask me like, oh, can you touch his vocal up? And he'll open up a nasty little FL studio session. Mm-hmm. And I'll be like, okay, give me a synth that I can then work on. And he'll go, oh, no problem. He'll click it and then a little dongle will come up like a little wire.
To the next one. Yeah,
I hate that.
I feel like it's innovative, bro.
Sounds cool.
It sounds.
See, look at that.
He's hating.
He's super hated.
Sexy,
I ain't gonna lie.
I wish we had a lot of time. I'm like, all right, Jesse.
Oh, I'll show him afterwards. Yeah,
but for me, I want to see bus one going to. What is that going to? Like, it just that I like literally.
You can see it with the wire going down. Like,
it's no, because sometimes it'll be your auxes too. Like, you're feeding, you know, like your aux bus for like your background.
Oh, it's colors. You can change. Like, it's different colors and stuff. Bro, it's kind of cool, man.
It's not cool.
It's kind of cool.
I'm not gonna let him get
one of these
off,
days.
Bro.
One of these days, we need you to just record an FL. That'll be the biggest video on your channel.
I let you know it won't. And the fact that. It would be, because it would. I'd be sick. So yeah, man, like whatever. So obviously, I know you deal a lot in obviously Afrobeats, mm-hmm, right? And cool. Stuff like that. How did you get into that side of the mixed world and stuff like that? Like, how did you get into that? Like, was there a first record that people were kind of like, oh, this guy like has like a hold on this and stuff? Like, how did you get into like that side of the world?
Yeah, I mean, it started when I was placed into Burna Boy's world. I was thrown onto the African Giant album to mix it.
Right.
And my manager is his A&R at Atlantic. Wow. And so there was this kind of synergist, just obvious choice that he's like, right. Well, we'll try you on this mix.
Wow. Great. What a try. Like, that's crazy.
Yeah.
That's crazy. Yeah. Go ahead.
Mm-hmm. One thing in Afro that I feel like is a trend, well, no, it's not I feel like, it's obviously a trend, is the gang vocal. And the best gang vocal I've ever heard came from Shayo.
Shayo.
Yelling at
so I want to know, how did you get that? And how did you, I guess, maneuver getting it to sound so clean and wide? Mm.
Yeah, it's so funny you asked that because we're like mixing a live version of it right now.
Oh,
so earlier today I was like experimenting with the filter on it.
Mm.
I'll take the easy way out here. I think that it honestly showed up like a pretty bandpassed, filtered, compressed stem, mm-hmm, as it was.
Right.
And I'll never be afraid to like share the credit that was the producer who did that, and it was,
oh,
it was
wonderful. Right. And at the same time, you did get it pretty out of the way of the lead. So when I listen to it, obviously that chant is there, but it feels like support. You know what I mean? It doesn't feel like it's like that. So how did you like create that relationship between the lead and that?
That's so funny you asked that. That was one of the major mix notes. That was almost a V1 approval, but they had a couple things they wanted to differentiate the vocal from the gang vocals by making them wider. They wanted the gangs wider.
Got you.
Okay. And they also were going to add in some extra production elements. They added some strings and stuff in there too. Anyway, yeah, mid-side. I used some mid-side to get that. Yeah.
Openness and stuff. And what would you say? What would you say is like a classic move for you in that mid side? Is it like going to like the mid range and adding side information to that, or
Generally, yeah, it would be like a mid, like the fundamental, just the meat and potatoes of a vocal for me is just, it lives around 1K, 901K. Mm-hmm. That's just, it's where a lot of the information is happening.
Right.
On a vocal, it's like 1K is almost like a volume fader.
Yep.
It can push things forward or pull them back.
Right.
And so I just did a mid cut with Pro-Q 3 on those gang vocals right there just to make a little space for Berna to sit there. And
and that was it. Oddly. Simple, right, simple cut. You got a one, you got something for him?
I got some rapid fire, man.
Okay, you got some rapid fire. I
got to put him on a hot seat, man.
Okay.
And I know he's going to be real, so let's go. Waves, UAD, Fab Filter, one got to go.
UAD. That's going to go. I never touched that stuff.
Finally. Mm-hmm. I feel bad because I don't have any of the UAD stuff. Ironically, I do. I just don't know how I have all of it. Right. Just like in demo mode. You know how it is when you install. I'm like, did I install one UAD plugin? So I'm good. Finally, somebody. Mm.
No, I got in with the homies standard. And they were like, log into mine and you can just have all the plugins. And,
and boom.
Like,
and
okay.
Yep.
Auto-tune versus Melodyne.
Auto-tune. 100%.
Nice. Auto-tune stay?
Sorry, what?
Auto-tune got to go or Auto-tune?
Oh, sorry. Auto-tune staying. Okay. Yeah,
I knew it. I knew you say. I was like, no, you said Auto-tune
I feel what you mean.
Heck yeah.
All right, one of your shortcuts got to go.
Mm.
Bounce in place or Control-V?
What is Control-V again?
Paste.
Oh, Command-V for us.
Command-V, I'm sorry.
You're a PC guy?
Yeah,
look, I'm not a PC guy anymore. But
dude, you're giving him shit about his dog. We haven't even gotten to the real,
hey, talk
the real
to
problem.
Hey, I've been Mac for maybe like 4 years because I was an FL guy and FL wasn't always Mac compatible up
game
until
changer,
like 2020.
Bro. Yeah.
So yeah, man.
That's crazy.
I would say Command-V. I don't feel like I ever actually use that. I use Command-D all the time though. I'll do a duplicate. And,
okay, got
like, if I go through like a chorus vocal stem and like I get everything leveled out or I'm going to spot tune some stuff. Mm-hmm. I'm going to get all the edits and automate it right. Mm-hmm. Then I could just Command-D to where it's going to spill out into the next chorus.
Got you.
That makes sense.
See, that's the funny thing about Pro Tools too, about some of our short keys. Like, there's multiple shortcuts for the same thing.
Yeah.
Like, I know, I remember you saw me hit B to split a region, and then he was like, I use E.
Command-E.
Yeah, you use E.
Same. I don't do quick keys.
See?
That's what I'm saying.
It fucks me up. It deletes stuff.
Yeah, and just mess it up.
Got those clunky fingers.
There you go.
Hot dog.
Same.
Hot dog.
Would you rather lose your space bar for press and play or Command-Z for undo?
Oh my God, Command-Z. Because like, I'm bad. I've worn out a lot of keyboards. They get like, they start to divot down in the center.
Oh,
like,
wow.
I don't know why I'm like fucking aggressive. Smack that space bar.
That's so true. I do too. You know, for me, my button is T. Like, you know, tap the tempo. I'd be like, and I'd be like, all right, we're good. We're at least in the range. I'll figure out like the main one.
Dude, small theory here. Tap to tempo is what separates the men from the boys of who can lock in with that.
Oh my.
When you sit back in the pocket and you can just get it.
Yo, I'm not going to lie. Like, I've had like my wife, for instance, I'll be like, yo, tap, do T. And they're like, I'm like, oh, you can't do it. Like, that is like a, like, dog. Like, I think it's like the wackest skill I have in Pro Tools. Like, I'll sit with that T. I'll be like, I'll be feeling what you call it?
It's timing.
Shout out Tap Tempo. Mm-hmm.
And then last question. It's not a one gotta go, but it's a question that we ask sometimes. And I know you're gonna keep it a bean. What's one plugin that you wish people would stop using? Just so you're not alone. Our answer was always S1 Imager.
What plugin do you feel like you like? We gotta get over
it. Like, whoa.
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel that. I'm thinking through like the general template that I usually see.
Uh-huh. That's a tough one. I'm not gonna lie.
Yeah, I might need a couple seconds to just,
kind of let that brew a little.
I'm gonna let it brew for a moment.
We'll circle back with that one. Freaking, you know, obviously, speaking of just, you know, obviously your contributions to like the Afrobeat scene and stuff like that. One thing that we always try to bring up, or something that I talk to a lot of like people that deal in the Afrobeat world, is percussion and drums. When you are now, first off, when I hear last, like that thing snaps. Like, it just has such a snappy, percussive kind of sound that I love of Afro. And I always feel like that's, like, pretty much, to me, that almost feels like one of the most important elements to me as far as that percussion and feeling good.
Yeah, that room be smacking.
Be smacking and stuff like that. Actually, I heard one time when you were talking about the Doja record, how you were at, like, a cafe and you were, like chilling out and you happen to hear the Woman record
over in the last weekend, you was like, ooh, you could point out your record because of how that snare or that rim was like cracking and stuff. So how are you bringing out like those transients and how are you attacking like just to get the percussion to feel snappy but still true to like what the record is and stuff like that?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, the rubber band compressor is pretty snappy.
Oh, yeah. We're going to talk about that, too. Ooh. Yeah, go ahead. Tell
just
us.
Just kidding. No. The actual answer is it's not what I do. It's more what I don't do. So I'm not compressing that stuff. I'm not compressing a master bus.
Right.
And, like, all of that is what is going to rob you of the really image. Important transient information. Mm. And those artists are all about the immediacy and the attack and just that shit being right in your fucking face.
Right.
It needs to be there.
Right.
So it's a lot of it's just keeping a really simple chain and just using the, if you want more drum, you know, turn it up.
Right.
Makes sense. And a little bit of that is like, you know, clipping instead of compressing to get stuff to break down. So like that way you're able to have the headroom and still, you know, get it to feel a little more intense.
Right.
Which makes sense. On the other side of that, uh-huh. I also noticed, as Dev pointed out with your, how you approach mixing the percussion, what I've noticed when it comes to Last, when it comes to Woman, a lot of the records that you touched on Planet Her, there's a lot of like, it almost feels like the same way you take care with the transients in the percussion, it feels like you do that to the instruments too. The instruments have their own kind of like little transient kind of like dynamic that kind of like blend in with the percussion. And they're all sitting on the side while the vocal is doing a lot of that driving work in the middle. Mm. What's your like, how do you approach like when you're mixing the instruments around everything else?
Yeah, that is totally a feel thing. I'm not ever going to be like a this plugin setting
kind of thing. You
know,
yeah,
right. It's like it's just you have to access the vibe, and for me, that's loading up something like Spectre from Waves Factory, and just you know, I call it eyes closed, ears open. I'll grab one of the bands, I'll close my eyes, and just boost and just move around. And this is something that my dad instilled in me. It was this phrase. It was find the instrument's voice. Where is the where is it trying to speak? Where is, you know, where is it coming to life? And it just someday when we get the Apple Vision Pro and we get those going and they have a VR mixing.
A VR EQ would be crazy.
Because that's what I wanted. I grabbed the little mouse and I move it around and it's so satisfying. So I just can't wait till we can grab that orb in spatial audio and just move it around. And it's just like, you know, my wife will come in and I'm just in there looking like a psycho.
Making records.
Right. Just moving shit around and stuff. That's funny you mentioned that because when I seen you when you say find the instrument's voice, to me, what it sounds like is like, okay, sometimes I'm like, okay, I have a vocal conflicting with a piano, for instance, right?
Yes.
And I'm like, okay, we got to pick a winner here for what frequency range one is going to live and one is going to like kind of, you know, not be. Yep. So basically, it's kind of like you take a Spectre, which is, for people that don't know, is basically like saturation instead of like a dedicated EQ. Mm-hmm. You're jacking that up and you're finding like, oh, it speaks well in that range right there, mm-hmm. eyes closed, feeling it. And then you're like, cool. And now you have a little bit of a boost there. And now you can get it out the way of a vocal kind of like with another EQ. Like, okay, you can get out the way because you're more prominent there. Would you say like that's kind of like how you're balancing things?
Yeah. Yeah. Because you're jumping between the band of the Spectre plugin and then you're jumping to the fader. You know? Because once you get the fundamental of that thing sitting right and you're like, okay, the instrument is balanced. Right. This is like the way that this thing speaks its best. Now let's reposition the volume.
Wow, gotcha.
You know, a lot of sources, you have to really decide, like, when you're turning up a fader to find its position. For example, like, with a keyboard pad or something in, like, a dense mix, it can be tough to get, like, a really warm, kind of murky keyboard pad to, like, exist, right?
Yeah.
So I might turn it up and I find myself getting it to a level where I feel like the low mids are speaking well enough. Like, I sense them. They're there. They're not interrupting with the bass or the low end of the vocal or anything else. It's good there, but I don't hear any clarity up top. So I'll stop with the volume fader right there. Mm-hmm. That's when I'll move over to EQ or saturation. Yeah. And then I'll start to rework, like, repositioning the focus of the top end of that instrument using EQ. Like,
gotcha.
900 boost, 1K. Is it 3K? Yeah. Where is the presence of that speaking?
Wow.
Speaking of keyboard pads, right? It's a two-part question.
Okay.
Right? First part, when producers send you stuff sometimes, right? Does it keep like the plugin name they used on like a synth or something sometimes?
Yes.
He's like, yes. So I got them all.
So you, speaking of that, ironically, you produced, you engineered one of my favorite records ever. Like it changed how I attack production, and it's Umi. It's a love affair.
Great.
So One, I would love to know how you attack that because that's the main focal point of the production. And two, did he lead a plugin he used for that pad?
For I've that intro, the
yeah. Goodness.
God, I wish I could remember, man. I'm so sorry.
It's all good. Yeah,
but I will tell you, that was at a time when I was very explorative with like hardware and put it in just like, I at that point in life, I was the mixer that was just really changing the song.
Yeah.
And like to my detriment a lot of the time, to be honest. And yeah, her and I like went back and forth a lot to sort of find a couple of my creative choices I made by like running things through distortion pedals. And, but also to like really rein it in and reel it back in to get it back to where the reference was. That was a really good reference mix.
Right.
So that is funny you talk about that record that now just surpassed like 100 million streams and has been like her biggest, one of her biggest songs.
Yeah. Right.
And it was like, it was just, I see it as a really valuable learning experience for me. It was like a fail in so many ways, but like, man, I freaking grew from that.
Yeah, you took a chance. Yeah. Like, you know what I mean? Like, you took a lot of chances on that record and stuff like that. And just like, let me see, like, what falls from the tree. But obviously, you know, you were trusted and they like kind of were like, okay, bet. Like, okay, I see what you're trying to do, but let's try to find like a happy medium and stuff like that.
She was so patient. She's so cool to work
with. Nice. That's what's up. That's dope.
Sorry, I didn't answer the question about
this.
No, I mean, at the end of the, you know, to know that it was more of an intuitive thing, you know, it's also important to me, like just to understand, you know, one other thing I did see in your Pure Mix kind of rundown was you use Gold Clip on your mix bus.
Yes.
Yes. So I wanted to ask you, because I wasn't clear on it, are you like using the Gold Clip at the end and printing that to send to mastering as well?
Yes,
like,
yes.
Yes, you are. Dude, I'm not going to lie. So I started to do it and I was like, I don't. That was like the one answer in that thing. I was like, is he printing it with it? Because I started to print it with it just to get rid of some peaks and stuff like that. And I would master that and my masters just sounded better, like coming from the mix stage. So what is your reasoning for putting like Gold Clip on your mix bus and stuff like that? Like, what's your reasoning for it?
It's wonderful.
That too, that part.
It's the best way to get loud and preserve the punch and the transient and the dynamics that you have. Okay. It's incredible. But the reason I keep it on to send to mastering is because it's like, man, I mean, we go through a lot of work to get the artist and the team and the manager and the A&R and the, you know, sometimes the writers and the musician. Everybody has finally signed off on the mix and we're like, we're all feeling good about it, hopefully.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And if I were to take that off and then print it, like the balances would be different. It just would. And I've dealt with this. And then you get the master back and it's like, that's not quite right. So it's like, why aren't we just mastering why aren't we mastering it exactly as we all heard it?
And giving a master engineer less work to do for the most part.
For real.
Yeah, yeah. That was interesting.
One of my favorite projects. I love this project. A lot of people seem to not be a fan of it. But you mixed on Jesus Is King.
And engineered. I didn't do any mixing on that.
Engineered.
All right, even better. How was that process? Because he's very all over the place in the most genius way, because he'll just want to record on an SM and not re-record it, or obviously the choirs and everything. You did everything we need, correct?
I did pieces of that.
Pieces of that.
Yeah, just little pieces. Okay. I was one of, because I had worked on the Yandi album, I guess, that never came out. But I worked with Ye, like, I think a couple of years before Jesus Is King ever came out. So by the time it came out, the songs had taken on a completely different
route. And
like, he reworked them, you know,
so much,
a lot.
Yeah.
Right, gotcha, right.
Yeah.
But I could speak to the experience. It was it was life-changing. It was amazing. It was really exciting.
Right.
I wouldn't say he was, like, in album mode or particularly prolific as far as, like, working big days. And we didn't get tons done.
Right.
But there was some tracking that happened. We were in Chicago at his like Easy Warehouse.
Uh-huh.
And then he flew us to Uganda. We recorded, we had a little setup down on the Nile River overlooking like hippos and alligators. And he took us on a safari and we saw lions and giraffes and elephants. And then we had these big domes set up out at this safari resort. And we were recording in these big like dome facilities. And yeah, that was it. We always had the UA interface with the Rupert Neve channel strip. We had the C800 or the 251, and then we had a 58.
Wow.
That was always just sitting there on the table ready.
Wow.
So here's another question. And we can finally put this to rest because
I was going to say it myself.
This
but go
always
ahead.
Been a thing.
Go ahead.
Does he use, no, what DAW or hardware does he use, or was he using at the time?
Oh, we were in Pro Tools.
Oh.
Oh, through and through, it was just straight Pro Tools.
Was he producing in Pro Tools, or was he like using like an MPC or an ASR into it. Do you remember?
We had the ASR, yeah. And I remember specifically one night I was on the phone with like pretty much everybody who's ever worked for him. I was like, I'm trying to load up like one of his archived floppy disks to like get this one sample off it. And
oh my gosh.
Yeah, really? Wow. It was a mission.
Right. Wow. So you had to, wow. So you went back that, like he still was using like that core, like, you know, old school kind of setup, like to, and you were just doing dumps.
Yeah, we always had the ASR and the MPC set up at all times.
Right.
Wow. Oh yeah, we were in Pro Tools and it was, you know the little window that pops up when you load a session? It's like following I/O was made inactive or this plugin was missing or whatever it tells you. I don't even ever know. He finally asked one time, he was like, what is that? What does that say? Every time we hit a session, you know, that thing pops up. And I was like, oh, that's just part of Pro Tools. It just does that. He's like, open up the web browser, please. Open up the email.
Wow.
And he insisted that we email Avid to try to get a private build, our own version that did not have that. Because according to him, this was one step between him hitting play and getting to fulfill this vision. And we were held up by it.
Dog. Shout out my guy, Rob, that is the head of engineering at Pro Tools. You heard that. That's crazy. I'm not going to lie. That's a wild one.
That's a story to hit them and say,
I need you to take this out of the door.
Which is hard.
Imagine, like, Pro Tools, you click his laptop and it says Kanye Tools. 2028.
Do you think he uses it? I mean, do you think he got it?
No. He said no. Oh, that did not happen. No. That's hilarious. So you know. Same, so speaking of equipment and stuff like that, actually, I'm glad we landed here. You know, you have a particular piece, but I'm not gonna just say it out loud. What is your setup as far as your D to A coming back into your system? Like, what is your entire like chain, analog to digital? Like, what is your chain at your like home studio that you mainly mix at? If I'm not mistaken,
100%. Yeah, I'm mostly in the box. Uh-huh. But I have one piece of outboard that I use. And to get in and out of the box, I'm using the Symphony Mark II special edition.
That's right. We are friends on that one. That's right.
Yeah.
I got the same interface. And you love it. We'll talk more about it. But yeah, tell me the rest of that. Like, that's it. So it's just that. And what else is it?
That and that. The two bus goes out to this Whitestone Evil box. It's like P331, I think is what it's called. The Evil edition is all black. And it's just amazing.
How did you find that piece? Because when I seen you use it for the Doja record, I'm not gonna lie, it made such a drastic difference in a tasteful way that I was like, oh my gosh, you have to leave that on. Like it had this way of kind of adding like this glue to it. So it's a tube box, if I'm not mistaken?
Yeah, it's a tube line amplifier.
Okay, tube line amplifier. Okay.
So basically, I heard it last year at NAMM, and before I even got home from the NAMM show, I placed the order online.
Wow.
Paid full price. This is not like an ad or anything.
Gotcha.
It's, you know, tiny company from what I understand. So it's like, we got to support our boys.
Yeah. No, for sure. That's why I want to bring it up, because it did such magical things. And then a lot of people have actually gotten that from you, to be honest.
All
because
right.
I was talking to a bunch of engineers, and it was like, oh, that Whitestone Evil, like, that thing is nasty. And I was like, bro, I've never heard of it until I saw you use it.
Yeah.
So, like, that is a tube box, and it's basically obviously running through the tubes, and it's just giving you a harmonic saturation. Like, what are you getting from that box? Like, coming back in.
So that box is using extremely clean tubes. Uh-huh. Yeah, so it's not like the black box, or you know, it's not like using a Pultec or something that's like a really retro design.
Right.
The thing that's great about this is it has so much headroom.
Mm-hmm.
So my gig oftentimes is like just subtly improving a session. I'll get a session from a producer and the whole team already signed off that they love it, so I can't change too much.
Right.
But I can put that Whitestone on, and even if their mix is at like -6, -5, like extremely loud, I can add that hardware insert, and it'll run out into this box and run back in without crumpling. Like if you try to run a loud mix into Pultec, or you know, even with something like the DW Friend compressor, it definitely doesn't. Those types of things aren't handling
that voltage hitting it so hard.
Yeah, exactly. Right. It can kind of fall apart and you lose a little bit of transient.
Right.
And that's so important, man. This one just blooms and lights up the mids in a way that I have really tried to find a plugin to do the exact same thing.
Right.
To no luck.
Right, yeah, to no avail.
That's great.
Heck yeah.
I have a question. It's more like me bigging you up, but it is a question. When I look at your discography and I look at Burna Boy, Doja, and then I see Umi, and I see Adekunle Gold. Those are like damn near opposite spectrums right. when it comes to opposite sides of the spectrum when it comes to tone. Mm-hmm. Like Burna Boy is known for having a very, very unique tone, and I think the same as Adekunle. So I want to know, how do you just get it to sound good, bro? Like, so well.
Right. Yeah. Like, vocals and stuff like that. Yeah. Like, because
his voice is very, like baritone-y, but there's also, like, certain things. I'm sure it's not the hardest to mix now that you've done so much, but it probably isn't isn't as easy as a Doja tone, which is damn near closer to the industry standard than his voice. You know what I mean?
Right. Mm. Yeah. So it's different between, like, Burna and Adekunle, because Burna's stuff shows up with all the effects on there, and his engineer does a fantastic job. Mm-hmm. Basically, anybody he works with, even if his engineer's not with him and he's with just somebody just making a beat, they're putting together a record, Burna will sit there and be, like, you know, pretty particular about them getting that sound right.
Yeah. Right.
So by the time that shows up, it is right. And the one thing I notice is when other people mix Burna, they don't pull out one particular resonance, which is around like 700. Maybe like 660 actually is where I thought it was.
Uh-huh.
I wanted to say it was like 666, but it's not.
And the devil's frequency.
Yeah, it's a tiny little notch that as soon as you pull it out, it clears up so much headroom to just make him just stand up a little taller.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
And it really maximizes things. On the other end of things, like with Adekunle, he sends mono recordings. So whatever they just tracked, you know, and he says, I want you to build this and make it, bring the sauce and do the thing. And we went back and forth quite a bit on that. And
what is it? Yeah. So everything that he sent you is basically in mono, you saying? Like all of that, the whole recording?
It's just dry,
It's just dry, just like straight up, just like, and you're just kind of painting the canvas. So while you get a little, do you feel like you get a little bit more creative freedom in that regard, being that it's like, hey, everything is just like kind of bare bones and stuff like that?
Yeah. Sometimes it can be frustrating because it's like, oh, there's so many directions. It's so specific. Mm-hmm. People are really particular.
Right.
Like, well, like, you know, there's any 100 different ways to make a great sounding vocal because it's subjective.
Right.
There isn't a factual definition for what a good vocal sound is.
Yeah. Right.
Luckily with Adekunle, he was just like, extremely cool and easy to please. Like we kind of nailed it. So it was really good. But other times you can end up just hunting for their sound for ages and ages. And
yeah.
You kind of wish they had just established that with a producer ahead of time.
Right. Funny, you know, the other day, I check, you know, I'm plugging company owner and I was looking at, I literally just so happened to look at like people that had like bought like the plugin and stuff, and I just so happened to gaze right, and I seen Jesse Ray, and I was like, did Jesse Ray just get the plugin? And I remember I was like, I'm gonna ask him when I see him. And then when I saw you, you told me that somebody that sent you a session had it on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that threw me off so much. Like I would have, by the way, I would have just sent it to you, by the way, if you hit me. But nonetheless, like, you got a session and you buy plugins that were missing and stuff like that. Like you're one of those guys that do that type of stuff.
Yeah, every time. And at first it was like a really big investment, you know? Every session that would come in, it's like, I have to buy like 15 plugins.
Right.
Like, I just can't. So I would have to figure out like balancing subscriptions and making it all work.
Yeah. Gotcha.
My life got a whole lot easier as soon as I got most of the plugins, because then I could just can open up the producer's session, especially if they're in like Logic or Ableton, which I learned how to use those. I'll just mix right out of those because it's like,
oh, wow.
Because even if you print great stems out of Logic, Ableton, FL, and then put them into Pro Tools, the way they digitally sum is different. It will never load up and feel exactly the same. Occasionally it will, but like most of the time when they're grinding into the master bus and it's all glued together somehow, it's summing through Ableton's. Different. Yeah, it's way different. And they notice when it's different.
Yeah.
So even if you load it up, like you're already losing the battle by not having the same starting point.
Yeah.
Dude, I've always felt like that's another reason why I started to stay in Pro Tools for just production, like even when I make music, because I would notice when I would carry over from another DAW, and sure, I'm printing on my stems and printing on something just doesn't
different.
Something right. And I know the age old argument of no, they all sound the same, there's no difference. Well, and I'm here to be very open and optimistic about it. But dude, I'm not gonna lie, like just from a sensibility standpoint, a feeling, I do get that feeling too. So just to hear you say that, I'm like, yeah.
While we're on there,
and not it's not better or worse either. It's
okay,
just, yeah,
just a different taste, like kind of a different taste. What are you about to say?
Speaking Lord of mercy. Better or worse, do you tend to favor stems, like mixed stems, drum beat stems that come from FL?
of course, dude. We're all loving that drive, you know?
Yeah.
NFL is more. Of course.
Yeah.
Clipper.
It has a set. I'm not going to lie. Like, when it comes to stuff, when I open some stems, especially from you, and I see current, I'm like, oh, here we go. There we go. Yeah. You know the stems? Like, sometimes they'll leave that extra current, master. So here's the one mistake don't make with a FL studio person sending you a session. Do not press play until you are absolutely sure.
You have muted all the extra buses and copies of the mix.
Exactly.
I don't know why it comes with the stems, but it's a really, really dope tool to have when you're making.
You told me the reasoning behind
it. So the current stem is basically if you want to A-B anything. So you put whatever plugins you want to test to see how it sounds. And when you click on it, basically any track that you click will add the effects on that.
To the current
track. Yeah, so the current track is basically an addition, if it makes sense. So if you click on track one and on the current track you have The God Particle, Knock, and fucking Fruity Reverb or some shit.
Right.
Then you click on track five, it'll add that to track five so you can see how it sounds with or without it.
So it's like an A-B kind of thing.
Yeah, or you can, I'm sure you could double it up and just test it to see how it sounds with your master bus and how it sounds without it.
Wow, so you guys are like really smart.
We're innovative.
Okay. I'm good.
Yep. I had a couple questions, actually. So ironically, since you brought up while talking about Jesus is King, the term bloom, definitely one thing that you're definitely goated for is your plugin Subloom.
I was coming around.
And I definitely would like for you to
I
know because you have the bigger experience in it. Right. But what I specifically wanted to know about it, two part question was A, how are you approaching the low end mixing to your records prior before making Subloom? And then what about the process inspire you to say, I need to make Subloom to like just have this in a more like, you know, quick fashion?
For reference, Courtney, I don't know if you know this about Courtney, but you know how people like stress about bills and just be at home like, God damn, how am I gonna do this? He'd be like that with low end. He'd be like, yo, it's such an uncontrollable state.
Youngin' in hip hop, as me and LJ in our generation have come up, Dre has inspired us to be like, but I just feel like for some reason his spirit hit me like, this low end is not hitting hard enough. Why?
He also watches anime, as you can tell. Good question.
Super Saiyan.
OD. But with Subloom and stuff like that, like what was the process before Subloom and now what is the process with Subloom? Like what was that mentality and process that went into that?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it's this concept I've been kind of, you know, working on for a while, and it's nothing that I invented, but it's, you know, we have the really, really old trick that everybody was doing where you use the kick to sort of trigger this gated sine wave, you know? So every time the kick would hit, you know, you get a pitch. Doom. Mm-hmm. And, you know, from there you can adjust the length and the pitch and all of that. And I would go a little bit deeper and I would automate the pitch to kind of swoop down to give this sort of great. And, you know, whether it be quicker, like, or slow. There were different opportunities where you could really add that to the productions and just add a lot of movement in the low end.
Right.
And after we did the last record and that was sort of how I was maximizing this technique was getting this blown out boombox low end where you get a kick to just go like, you know, because the initial transient of the kick is more like, and you get the punch of the upper mids too. So it's, but then once you add that lower sine thing in, right. And then you have it cut off, you know, depending on the rhythm of your track, or you have it fade out, or you have it pitch down. All of these things it was just a complex thing with, like, you know, this technique took like five different faders to execute and like seven plugins. It's like, I need to put this shit into one plugin, make it easy.
And you did. And you got the kick side for reference, kick side, and you got the sub side.
For sure.
And what I like is the frequencies that you've chosen, right, as far as what, like, is, you know, what frequencies you want to attack in the kit. It was like 400, 800. I found it very, like, fascinating. I was like, oh, yeah, like 400, 800. I think 1K, I feel like it was like those increments. Yeah. And then on the other side, you had also, like, the 60 and stuff like that I could add just a little bit with that actual filter, like, and stuff.
For sure.
And then the beautiful thing is you have a resonance on it. So I can kind of, like, bump on where the curve is actually occurring. Like, it's literally opened up my ability to be very surgical with the kick and literally dial in exactly what I want. Even the saturation circuits that you have on it. What my question, from Saturated 1, 2, and 3, what is the difference between 1, 2, and 3? Like, was it inspired by anything? Like, I want this type of saturation for 2, this type of saturation for 3. Like, what was the inspiration for those 3 saturators, particularly on the kick side?
Yeah, we were just thinking, like, soft, medium, and hard. I think what it comes down to is, like, we have, like, a gentle second order saturation on 1. Uh-huh. And I think the second one is tape, so primarily second order. And then the third is, like, this all-over, all-out just obliteration. Just
right.
Second and third and
right.
Just sort of like blown out tube.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And occasionally that'll work well for something.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Is there a because I'm still learning it myself. I take a long time to really dive in and just really experiment with plugins. Is there a feature on it or one that we just haven't named that does speak to that ooh kind of effect with the bass and adding that underlying sub pitch down or fade out to the kick?
Yeah, that would be the little pitch dive button.
Mm-hmm.
So once you hit that, and then you're kind of from there, you're able to, that unlocks this different control within all of the like length and decay and attack. Then it's sort of, those all behave differently as soon as you hit that.
Right.
So you got to hit that button and then you sort of have to move things around and usually make it pretty lengthy to really hear the full effects of
right, of it like dying down. Yeah. Because I've seen that pitch dive and I was wondering.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
So theoretically, throw it on a master.
Oh, boy. Right?
Just to mess around, man. How would that be dope?
I don't think so. So yeah, we don't have oversampling on the plugin because I think that drums lend themselves well to aliasing and
goodness.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry to cut you off.
It helps.
But thank you for saying that because a lot of times I'm very careful with oversampling in general when it comes to overall stuff because sometimes I notice I'm like, okay, I can hear that anti-aliasing. Like I hear it, but I'm like, but something I like. So once in a blue, like especially with drums and stuff, like I notice a softening in my transient sometimes when I throw like oversampling on like a drum bus or something like that. So I try to stay away from it. And once again, it's like in the book, like this is one of those rules that I like. I'm like, but I don't like the sound of it. You know, like I mess around. The other day we were, and I'm not sure if you do this, but in the fad filter, like changing the phase on the EQ.
Yes.
Yes, you do that as well. Yeah, and I was
natural
talking
phase.
Natural. Dog, it was funny. A lot of people do not touch the phase on their Pro Q3 at all. So you generally like the sound of natural phase on a Pro Q3?
Absolutely.
What makes you like geared towards that one, like for the most part?
Let's say you're seeing one of those EQ curves of death, right? Mm-hmm. You've got like 50,000 notches.
Yes.
In those scenarios, and if you flip back and forth, you will hear the difference.
Right.
And especially if it's something plucky with transient, right? Mm. Or in things with low-end information too. Yeah. And then if you go to linear phase, like you'll really hear that the low end is not exactly.
Right.
It's just something isn't pushing. The envelope gets, it's like the envelope has hesitation suddenly instead of immediacy.
Interest, and that's what I describe it. My brain says softening. Like it just feels like my transient gets soft. So I typically stay away from linear phase on like low end. Like I've been doing that, like on transient stuff. I'm so glad we're having this conversation because a lot of people do not talk about that. Like as far as like, some people just load up Pro Q3 and be like, it's an EQ, I'm just using it. But they don't understand like that phase different and that phase shifting that's happening when they start employing like huge, you know, low passes and high passes and stuff. So natural phase is the one that you found to be like just very pleasing aesthetically and stuff like that.
Yeah, it's great. Like actually at all times I have every piece of audio on my computer runs through one of those because I like just tune the speakers with it.
Wow. Oh, wow.
Yeah, because I'm working on NS10s and like they need a little bit of help in some spots.
Just, right.
Some of it's the room. Some of it might be the NS10s. I don't know if you heard, they have kind of a weird EQ curve to it.
Yes. Like, dude, I'm not going to lie.
Has that rumor gotten around?
Oh, no, it's been around. Like, it's funny because I hear NS10s and I'm like, dude, like, this thing is mid-range. Like, it's like, it's just so much mid-range and just like, it has a hard, like, hit, like, you know, that you could have on the bottom. But once again, I've always heard, as far as the myth behind them is, if you make a good sound there, they'll sound good anywhere. They translate really well. So I've always felt like NS10s have that curve of, you know, low cut, high cut, and it's just like, I'm just going to give you what you need to hear and you need to clean this mess up right here. So you're still on the NS10s for the most part.
Yeah. Yeah, I work on these big Strauss monitors, but like currently I'm in between studios. studios, and I'm waiting on building permits to come in for this this build. Uh-huh. So the Strauss and everything, pretty much all my gear is in storage right now. So I'm on I'm on this little bitty rig with some tube traps and the NS10s.
And that's it.
Yeah, and it's incredibly tasty. So what most people don't understand about that speaker is everybody hears it in rooms where you have this desk, either a console or like a desk trying to be a console. And these were designed to be up on a bookshelf, up against a wall, to where they could really use that back wall as the resonant voice to assist and sort of extend what they do. And not only that, but like the way that the reflection happens when you get that desk. The NS10s just don't like that. So as soon as you get all that shit out of there, get the desk out of the room, put the NS10s into like an attack wall or soffit mounted up again, or just up against a wall, that mid-bump is like, it's cleaned up quite a bit, and they just feel freaking good. They feel natural to me. I love them.
What speaker? What's the actual model like with the speakers and stuff like that? Strauss. What did you call them?
Oh yeah, Strauss. The Strauss. I use the MF4. It's like this big floor standing like main speaker.
I've seen it. I've actually seen a picture of you using them and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So I didn't know that was the philosophy behind those speakers. And then also you touched on something that I feel like I got a lot of crap for this one time because I was looking for desks and shout out my guy Jay Rose at PAD and he was like, do you want like the small desk? Like a lot of engineers are going for like the really like small desk to reduce desk reflection and stuff like that. And I remember I was like, no, I want a big desk. Like it's my studio. It's like my first like real, this is like my, I just recently got my first real like home studio.
I was there too.
Like, okay, you know the vibes. And I had my outboard gear and I was like, yo, I really need a place to put my outboard gear. Like I need space and stuff like that. Now granted, of course I could have got a right space. I know better now.
Sure.
But nonetheless, I was like, no, I want a nice desk because I also create content. So as far as what I do, I was like, I need a desk. So I got the desk. And the first thing I noticed when I threw out a sine wave like with REQ Wizard, just to kind of see, okay, what's the issues in my room? Where am I like getting cancellation, like in problems? Those desk reflections in the mids. So would you say that the desk, as far as those reflections and what's happening when this coming off of the speakers, hitting the desk and coming back to your ears, what problem do you find that it actually creates for you, like frequency wise?
Three problems. It's great. I'm not an acoustics expert by any means, but it creates resonance. So it will reverberate and bounce and just cling on to frequencies and just allow those to unfortunately ring out longer than they should be. It'll make certain frequencies louder, and it'll also, you know, the physics of that bounce that's happening now from the floor to the ceiling, from the floor to the desk, from the speaker to the desk, there's cancellations happening. So you have other like dips. So you have dips and peaks that you don't want there.
Right.
And there's just the comb filtering. Like there's this actual delay that's happening. The sound leaves the speakers, goes to your ear. And the sound is like also hitting the various parts of these fucking spaceship desks.
Right.
And then it's hitting your ears again, like at a different time, like several milliseconds later, right. I think. I'm not an expert.
Sure.
But, and it's a mess. It just smears everything. You lose your transient, you lose the immediacy. How the fuck can you know how to EQ anything if you can't hear that the information is there, right, or you're hearing too much of it? It's like, where is north? I don't even know where to go.
Right.
And I experienced the same thing. Yeah, as soon as I got rid of my desk, it was like, this is easy. Right. I've been fucking up forever.
Right. You're like, I'm actually hearing this shit for the first time and stuff like that. Wow.
Revelation. It was like the biggest game changer.
So you're waiting for, you say you waited for permit. What was the word you used?
Building permits, yeah.
Building permits.
Yeah. Shit. The city of Los Angeles is not exactly easy to help facilitate, you know, us following our dreams and just being able to get shit done in a reasonable amount of time.
Right. In the city of Angels, too. That's interesting. Man, I would love to know as somebody who, you know, I don't have those NS10s. I don't got those big joints. Like, y'all are my rich friends, right? So
NS10s are like the cheapest.
I was like, they're dirt.
I'm like, that's why they rule.
Actually dirt.
Pardon me.
It's okay. We'll get you
that. That's exposed to my tax bracket.
It was. Pardon me. Okay. You're fine.
I just want to know, what's your go-to headphones? What do you like? You got the hair, too. Like, it might get in the way. Like,
obviously, I like the AirPod Pros. I mean, that's like...
Ooh. Oh, got you.
Yeah, everybody is all about that. I used Sound Source on the Mac, so it like... You can change the output so you can have Pro Tools just send directly to the Bluetooth to AirPod Pros. Sense.
Oh, wow.
So yeah, okay. I'll mix right in there. Like,
there's no latency kind of thing.
No, it's freaking immediate.
Shout out to
awesome. Oh, wow. Okay, I'm going to ask you about that after. So that's another point of reference for you and stuff like that with the AirPods and stuff like that.
Yeah.
What is your reference? Are you the type of person to reference other songs and stuff like that by any chance, or just have any references when you're in your mix and stuff like that?
I do when I need to get familiar with the system.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So like if I'm going into Just for the Record and I need to like really get acquainted with it quickly so I know where North is,
right.
I have like a playlist of some different mixes that I've known forever. You know, yeah. Mixes I used to use to like tune PA systems in clubs or mixes I've used to tune my own like studio rigs, just things I've been hearing forever and ever and ever.
Right, yeah. Right. Like, just to see where you are.
Yeah. I could imagine that the blending of genres that Burna did on the last album was a little bit to get used to because I haven't heard anything like that. Where it's just super hip hop or super like R&B production. But we're gonna take it to the next level on the Afrobeat with the vocal side. So I wonder, how did you balance that? Or was it like a learning curve?
That's a really good question. It became a problem when we got to the mastering stage. Right before sending out to mastering, we end up throwing all the final like approved two tracks into a sequence.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. All of Burna's albums are like seamless playback from like the first to the last.
Right.
He is incredibly conscientious about it being an experience of listening to an album.
Right.
Because that's how it was for us growing up.
Yep.
Yeah.
So we throw these into a sequence, and there's often like skits. Could I have one more of those too, please?
Slide.
Thank you so much.
Slide the water of it.
So we have a sequence that has all the two tracks and all the skits laid out, mm-hmm. and we're generally trying to level out all the songs too, because mm-hmm. they're
yeah.
So as far as volume, like a really dense, more of like a trap style record,
right.
Is going to come in a lot hotter than some of the more sparse, like the opening track. I told them is like just. Like a hand percussion,
and
if you try to get like a sparse arrangement really loud, like something with just hand percussion, like it's gonna fart out at like -10. Like it has no chance of getting to -6.
Right.
So we had the battle of like asking ourselves, thank you so much. So we had the battle of deciding, well, do we bring all the hot records down to like -10?
Right.
Yeah.
And essentially that's what I did. So in that final layout session for like the last few albums, I just bring the level of all the records down to kind of match the healthy level of like the loudest I can get that sparse arrangement.
Right.
And then we just send everything to Gerhard to master from there. And he kind of takes care of getting it all
like loud and tastefully loud and stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Right.
What would you say was the most difficult song on either of the last two projects? Because those were the ones that kind of catapulted him to like the mainstream.
Totally. Well, I told this story on another podcast. Sorry, I know there aren't any other podcasts.
There's no such thing.
The podcast.
Nah, shout out to another podcast. Okay, it's all love. It's all like, it ain't no war. Ain't no war, cuz.
Yeah. I think, it was on the second to last album.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And I don't remember which title it was, to be honest.
You've done a lot.
But it was one of the records. Oh my goodness. I have to like sort of comprehend the problem again to be able to tell you. But there were... We're able to edit this down a little
bit. Oh, yeah. Don't worry about it.
All right,
yeah.
Let me take a sip.
And we're going to figure this out, ladies and gentlemen.
And this episode is sponsored by Mix with the Met.
Probiotic soda. I'm fine, but wow. I'm leaving that in, by the way.
That was fire.
I want the world to know that there are probiotic sodas out
here in this studio.
That's awesome. But yeah, no, you're good. You're good. I'm fine. Thank you. Wow. Yeah.
Do you want to look at the track list real quick? Right.
What's that?
You want to look at the track list real quick?
Kind of.
He's like, I've done so much, bro. Like, I need to look at the track list. Let's take a look.
I'm not trying to pull that kind of flex.
Oh,
I think it was the...
We know. It's okay.
It might have been Tony like, Ann Sing.
He was like, I don't know, man. That was
Tony
like...
Tony Ann Sing is my shit.
So much.
Tony Ann Sing.
Like, I'm super interested.
Or was it different size? And I'm also just having trouble remembering what the fucking problem was. But like, the gist of it was like, there was a two-track... Mm-hmm. And like all we could find, all they had was the approved like producer mix, which was the two track.
Right.
But they wanted to change some vocals or fly in it. It was a new Burnaverse. That's what it was.
Oh, okay.
So I did have beat stems, but they sounded very, very different.
From the reference?
Yeah. The beat stems, like it actually was like the reference was a little bit smaller or maybe more mono collapsed for some reason.
Okay.
Like a little more lo-fi.
Okay.
So it had some flavor.
Right.
The beat stems didn't. And, God, what the hell was the... There was getting up to this verse where we had missing files.
Ooh.
We had to... That's what it was. I could probably restart this story and it'll make sense.
Right.
We had a bunch of the stems, but we didn't have this verse.
Okay.
That's what it was.
Right.
And so the whole song was my stem mix. It was cool.
Right.
But it had like a kind of a clean vibe and I did my best to match.
Right.
Because getting into that section where there's that... The verse that was missing, we had to use the two track.
Yeah. Right.
So we had to like sort of seamlessly have the mix switch from all the stems right to the two track without people noticing. Cool. So I actually had like RC20 on the entire instrument bus of my stems.
Gotcha.
And it was like, you know, turning the automating the magnitude knob from zero and like sort of turning it up into over 30 seconds leading into that two track, turning up the magnitude with like a tape filter to like get it to like kind of collapse and like be degraded, fading right into that two track seamlessly for where that verse was.
Oh my God.
And then back out and then back in for another part at the end. So it was like, yeah, it took like 7 hours to get this right.
I can imagine.
Yeah.
What the hell?
Because in the back of mind, I'm saying to myself, okay, if you did that, then you would need to be very conscientious of the two-track at all times.
All time.
During your stem mixing of the thing.
Yes.
Wow. So even like, okay, for instance, if you, because you couldn't, so, wow.
Man, shout out to whoever got fired, by the way.
You had to really sit there and say, okay, I know what I want to do to the kick, but you was like, but can I pull it off in the two-track to kind of make sure it matches?
Yeah.
So, like, how were you doing that dance with it? Like, just as far as two-track and mixing the stems. Like, how were you doing that dance?
Exactly as you think.
Right.
Metric AB, like, a lot. So I could, like, just quickly flip back and forth.
Right.
And then when we got to that point, it just, yeah, it just had to work.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
We had to figure it out. Because that album was before he had a dedicated engineer that was essentially, like, the protector of all assets for this album.
Right.
So that album, like, to be totally transparent, it was, like, a shit show trying to track down all the pieces.
Right.
Bruno was traveling around the world, you know, really, really blowing up and experiencing fame and touring a lot and making that album on the road.
Right.
Working with a lot of cats. And then the pieces were getting missing and laptops got broken. And one producer, like, was at a party and wine got spilt all over it. He lost all his files. So this was one example of, like, how we had to really pull everything together and put out an album. And we had, like, 3 days to mix it. So it was I had two of my assistants over helping. We had a little factory going on in my garage studio. We just mixed it, like, Steve Jobs style, just in a garage. Yeah. It was fun. The energy was great. We had a good time. And we were drinking whiskey and stuff, celebrating when we finished. And we were streaming it to Berna. He was out in Vegas.
And just letting him listen to it at the same time. And he approved.
It was a song.
Wow.
There was a song on the album that, and I'm a big fan of Blast and his production. He produced and he was featured on it. I wanted to know, because he took a different approach than he usually does when, I think he mixes his own stuff, right?
If I'm not mistaken, I don't know if you know.
And he produces
Blast mixes his own vocals and stuff like
that. I don't
know. Yeah. I don't know. Like, I see him in the, literally when I look at credits, it literally says mixed by Blast.
Cool.
And I always wonder, like, holy crap, is he mixing his own record? So I always wondered if somebody internally kind of knows, behind the scenes. I'm like, yo, what? Like, I would love to know if he was.
It's a public service announcement.
Public service announcement.
But I want to know, when you got that beat, was there anything, did you take a heavy hand on mixing the stems, or?
Can you play that one for a sec?
I got you.
He's like, look, man, let me tell you, no flex. He's like, I just need to know.
Yeah, okay, cool.
That kick slapping on that phone, by the way. I ain't gonna lie. I was like, what the fuck?
So this was a really great opportunity because I was, you know, I had my assistants there and I'm really big about the mentorship and getting these guys in and just, you know, empowering them to go out in the audio world and take over.
Yeah.
So Mix Giant, who is like literally a giant, 7 foot tall without shoes.
Okay.
I don't know if you met him at NAMM.
I didn't meet him. I've known about it for a long time, but no, I did not know he was actually 7 feet tall. No.
Yeah, no, he's great. And at that point in his career, he was ready to like spread his wings and go out and like, you know, take over the world.
Right.
So that was one of those, he said, man, I love Blast. Can I take a stab at this one? Mm-hmm. And can I mix this record?
Wow.
So he's credited as the mix engineer. And, you know, I'm still mixer because I kind of oversaw it.
Of course.
I was there. We were in the studio. And
yeah.
But like that was a chance for him to, before he left my team, he was able to take a mix engineer credit, not just the assistant credit.
Got you. Right. And, to show what he does.
Yeah. And like so he got that one and I think two other songs on the album where he's mix engineer.
Right.
So that was an
Wow. Well, shout out to Mix Giant, man. Wow.
I don't know what couch or what tripod we'd use to get that episode. But
yeah, facts.
You're watching.
It's going to be like one of those, the old timey interviews where it's just you get a tall person and it's just the neck.
It's just neck. Straight neck.
Hey, man.
I want him to sit right here.
That's so uncomfortable.
Was that the parents on Dexter's Lab or was that cow and chicken?
Yeah. I remember all that. Yeah. But no, man, you know, Jesse, and just to sum things up and stuff like that. Once again, man, I really, really appreciate, like, just everything and the confidence you instilled in me personally you know, early on in this journey with this podcast. That's why I was fighting so hard. Like, remember, I remember last year, I was trying to get you on last year too, but obviously schedules and everything got crazy. Sure. But I was like, you were the first person I reached out to and was like, hey man, I'm in town. I really want you on the pod just to give you your flowers and say thank you for just like, really, dude, for real, like to see, how long was I talking about? Like, Jesse Ray fucking hit us. It's on. We're doing the right thing. Like, that that really meant a lot. And it was literally last, like, just came out. Like, it was just like, yo, what? Like, so.
You guys are dope, man.
Thank you, man. Yeah, really appreciate
it. It's so valuable to have important information out there. I was really frustrated this week at NAMM, like, you know, going from how great our panel was and seeing what you were doing and the type of questions that you ask. You guys are so gifted at engaging and creating useful info. That's helpful. Mm-hmm. And then I would go to these other panels and I would just like, it was just like, it's an ethical issue that I'm frustrated about. Right. Like, how many kids are traveling from all around the world to get out here for the NAMM show just to like hear somebody talk about their hi-hat EQ? Like, dude, we got to be given the philosophy and the holistic advice that's like actually helpful, that can like fucking guide them on their journey.
Right.
Like, this is like, we're so passionate about this stuff and it means the world to anybody who does it. Mm-hmm. It's like,
and that's why
I want everyone to win. We can all win.
That's why I'm meeting like engineers like yourself that have that same philosophy that, you know, I think can only be portrayed in long form content, right? Like this kind of situation where it's like, we have to let you talk it out and say, okay, yeah, this EQ, this button and stuff, but here's why. You know what I mean?
I was about to say, like, to give you flowers as well. Like, once Dev put me onto the Pure Mix video and stuff, out of all, and I've, like, between me and him, we've watched everybody. All of you guys just breaking things down. You speak so passionately and just you know, each one teach one, like, about music and stuff, and you're really like, we can tell, like, you're in it, you're in the moment, and you really want to like let people understand how your process works. Mm-hmm. You're very big on, hey, try it for yourself, this is what I did, but there's no one right way. So I really appreciate that, bro. Absolutely. Just how you speak to the music, how you speak to the process and everything.
Yeah. And being open to like little shit, like giving us what plugins you're using, or telling us how your plugin works, or saying, hey, I passed this mix off to my assistant to get this done.
Yeah,
a lot of engineers aren't that open or that transparent, so thank you so much.
Yeah. So thank you for what you're giving back to just everybody.
thank you guys.
See, but it's not, you laugh because it's like, nothing. You're like, yeah, it's normal for you, right? But you know how, things are starting to, things are, not even some of these guys now, but how things were back in the day, you know, where it was like, dude, I would meet people, engineers, when I interned at studios, like real young, and I'd be like asking them questions and I'm assisting them. I am the assistant, like in this session. And they were being weird with me, like, just like, yeah, no, like you got to do this. Like, I would ask questions. They wouldn't want to give it to me. It's like, so you want me to spend a year of you kicking my ass and then you'll start to like, all right, man, all right, here we go. Let me show you some stuff. Yeah. But, you know, that's why I say I think that this generation of music and just quality of sound, I said this is going to contribute to it because you guys are being so open, guys and girls, are being so open about just information and stuff like that. And it's helping people get past the bullshit faster.
Yes,
you know? Because all the things, I'll be honest, like the last 2 years of my mixing life, I've gotten exponentially better just because of the information, being able to talk to y'all, like asking y'all like, hey, am I doing this wrong? How do you feel about this? And you guys are like, oh, do this, blah, blah, blah. This is what's why I do it. Mm-hmm. I've learned so much in the past 2 years just from our podcast episodes.
Yeah.
Literally this episode, I'm going to watch it. Like, you know, like, I'm serious. Like, how many times have we watched the TZO episode over, the Mix by Ali? Like, we watch our own stuff over. Yeah, great dudes, man. And, like, they give us a lot of information. So, once again, Jesse, thank you so much. Make some noise for Jesse Ray one time.
Yeah. Hey. FL originator, like, he started.
I'm not gonna lie, 90% of everybody did start at FL. But
except for you, man.
No, I did too.
Oh, word?
Yeah. I just don't like to say it out loud.
be you, man. It's 2024.
Nah, I don't want to be myself. Open. Not with that. I don't want people to know that on my
man. We're accepting everybody, man.
Not FL, though. It's a lonely island. I don't want to be there.
I have a shot that I could take that'll ruin.
Don't you dare. Podcast. Don't you dare. But Jesse, do you have anything coming out? Anything you want people to be aware of and stuff like that? You can say your Instagram, please. Like, I want people to follow you.
And where to find your plugin.
Yeah, the plugins, everything. Like, please, like, let us know. Seriously.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. You can find me on Instagram, Jesse Ray Mix. We got a lot of plugins, a lot of mixes coming out this year. And
yeah.
I'm just going to keep doing what I've been doing because I'm having a lot of fucking fun doing it.
Heck yeah. yeah. For the plugins, where can they find the plugins and stuff like that?
Mixland.io.
.io. That's a fact. I am an owner of Subloom, and I sponsored this plugin for sure. I mean, when it was Black Friday, I told you. I was like, go get it now.
Subloom right now. Oh, dude, right back at you. I love your stuff, too.
Oh, thanks, man. I appreciate that, man. Heck yeah, heck yeah. And we'll, I know we'll have another conversation. Maybe I'll have you back on just to talk about like the plugins, because that is not an easy feel to be at all. Like that
shout
was
out, that shout stuff. Out to iLock for being the most. Yeah, I'm sensitive. Just beep.
Thank you. I was like, edit. When they press a button to say, we don't like that guy no more. Everyone's computer just goes out. So this has been the My Audi Nerds podcast, a podcast for Audi Nerds like yourself. Please make sure you comment, like, and subscribe. Sure. Also, make sure one lucky person in that comment section is going to get a VIP Gold Edition Rosetta EQ or compressor. Also, make sure you check out Jesse Ray's stuff. I'm going to leave a link in the description for that as well. And if you have any questions for him, shoot us in the comments or follow him, DM him, and hit him up, because that's sure as hell what I did.
I got a YouTube channel, man. We popping. We outside. We making YouTube videos.
That's right.
On my YouTube channel.
That's right. And by now, you're one of those things. Record should be out with DCAP.
Wow, yes. Wow. As a matter of fact, hopefully by this time, yes, one of those things by me and DCAP will be out. So please go stream that. Yes.
Yeah, you can hear that hard-ass trillion compression on
that. That hard-ass trillion compressor.
Which may or may not have a subloom processing on the kick. Just saying.
Because I mixed it, and it super does. It has subloom all over. That video is coming soon, too. Appreciate y'all, and until next time, y'all.
Yes, sir.
Peace.